another week taking a look at Division I college football from the strength and conditioning perspective. Today we went all over the place. How do you deal emotionally and physically with a big loss to a big rival? What kind of toll does that take on the team? How do you reset that ego hit to the culture the following week and move on to continue pursuing this team's goals? All of that and more. Let's have a day. Let's go. It'll come to you on the podcast.
You know what? It probably will.
As we jump right in here, back on the 5-10-5 show for another week with Coach Justin Lima. Justin, how we doing?
I'm good. And I'm wearing my Hawkeye gear right now. So I don't know anybody who's listening to this when you're listening to it. Yeah, we lost last week. Okay. But we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the psychology of what it's like when you're the strength coach in the weight room. We talked about it before, how you set the culture. We're going to talk about how you recover from a loss into a quote unquote big loss.
Yeah. Today's all it's funny that the way you brought that in. Like, I don't know anybody who's listening to this. Maybe nobody is listening. I read a comment yesterday on our I just came across on X some random Hawkeye fan that was like, and it got a lot of traction. It had like 50 replies and like 500 favorites.
Jeez.
Or likes. And it was just simply, is there anybody else out there who just can't listen to any kind of content after a loss like this? Like, I just can't listen to any of the radio shows or the normal podcasts that I listen to. And I'm like, God, man, that's so, and I know that's true. We were just talking about the human capabilities of a human before we jumped on here being weird. And mentally, the psychology of humans is really interesting to me as well. And I understand. Like, big loss, you don't want to hear about it, so people just don't tune into our podcast. People will be listening to this on Friday, so maybe it's worn off a little bit. Maybe that sting has worn off. Everybody feels the sting in a different way. You've probably still feel that sting.
No, and that's what I was going to get into, is okay. The fact that, like, you have to truly move on, right? No, mm-hmm. And I said this is going to be a little bit of an aside. So back when we introduced to you guys the Slight Edge, we had to, and we were asking for simple daily disciplines repeated over time. Mm-hmm. We needed to look for slight edge improvements, which meant it might not be noticeable day by day, but little things added up. So we shouldn't expect the big. I say that because if we're asking you guys to move on, we truly have to as well as coaches. Like, it can't, like, right now we're recording, it's Tuesday. People are listening, it's Friday. You can't be talking about last week on Tuesday or Friday. You give it the 24-hour rule and you truly move on. Like, you put it in the back of your memory of like, hey, let's not make this mistake against this front when they run a 3-4 or the 3-3 stack and they're slanting. But you don't keep revisiting it, because if you tell the players you have to move on, because we've seen it, we beat Ohio State 2017. We get woodshedded against Wisconsin the next week, right?
Purdue.
No, it was Wisconsin.
Was it Wisconsin?
Because Josh had another like 2-interception game. We did lose to Purdue later that year.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's like, if you don't, if for good or bad, right? Remember when we lost to NDSU and then our next game was Rutgers, and Coach Ferentz in the locker room was like, move on. Like, he essentially said, like, move on, right? So, like, you can't let a bad loss or a good win stick with you. So, like, yeah it stings, especially me living in Central Iowa. I got more people that think, you know.
That's what stings.
But I'm like, you know what? That's where you go with the win. Like, sure, you got that win, but like, hey, when's the last time you've been to the Rose Bowl? Hey, like, you just try to one up them all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you just, well, you know, when's your last draft pick? When are the different things that you've done?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but Iowa State's actually really, they are on the map. I think it's an underrated thing in sports too, where you blame everything. This could be, man, we could maybe turn this into like it's strength conditioning, but also this is like sports psychology podcast. Because I really, your opinions I love on this stuff are really fascinating too, just from kind of a lot of the stuff we talked about on our main episode. The psychology of, or no, what I was going to say was Iowa State is like, if you watch last night's NFL game, I don't know if you caught Monday Night Football at all. They got like
very little.
They got like between those two teams specifically, the Jets have three Iowa State players starting for them, like big time players. And then you have Purdy on the Niners.
So one of the things about that I wrote down was Iowa State 2023 beat TCU. And I am friends with the strength and conditioning staff at TCU. And they were like, we're worried about this game going in at Ames. Like, they're a tough team that
they're not a bad team.
Exactly. And like us, Iowa, like people in Iowa that are Hawkeye fans are going to want, like, they're not the Iowa State of the old. Right.
And you have to get out of that mindset.
2023 national championship returning team from TCU that was loaded with talent. I've been in that weight room with TCU in this calendar year.
Yeah.
They are stuck. So it's like it or not, Iowa State is a good football team.
It's something that my dad was a coach. So he was my basketball and football coach in high school. And, every coach has their flaws in the way they think about certain things, especially when you add in the dynamic that I was not only a player for him, but I'm his son. So we go home at night and like, you know, it's hard for him to get out of coach mode a lot of times. And I've always been a very almost annoyingly logical human. I use logic as like my North Star. Like, does this make ultimate sense? Are we looking at both sides of things? Stuff like this. And we would lose games in like AU basketball or even when we got into high school football, we'd lose a game to Waukee, which is where I now live, or West Des Moines Valley. Like, and we weren't supposed to beat those teams. Like the dynamics of a high school program and how you build a high school football program in Marshalltown versus, and he would just be so pissed. He'd get in. He might be listening to this. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening, but like, I understand the emotional side of getting pissed, but they have players who are trying to win the game too. And in college, the other team went out, especially with NIL nowadays, they are paying their players to come win football games for them too. They make good plays too. It's not always just, oh, this was our fault. We should have done this. We let that. No, sometimes the other team wins the game. And I think there was. Not I think. I know there was a lot of that in the second half the other day. Sure, Iowa made their mistakes, but they have good players too. And unfortunately, they aren't the Iowa State of old, because I think that's where the mindset comes from too, is Iowa State's little brother, the jokes, all the stuff. It's like, they might, especially with a win against Iowa, which is one of, you know, one of the toss-ups on their schedule, if you look at it on paper, they might win 10 games this year. There's a chance that they win 10 football games this year. And you and I both know, we used to talk about it all the time inside that facility, like win double-digit ball games, that's hard to do. Not a lot of teams do that and do it consistently at that. So
if you think about it, that's what Iowa built its reputation on, doing exactly that. Beating more talented teams by being more united. We just talked about the Ohio State win. Like, when you look at the roster, like, I looked at it because I'm going to talk to some high school about it. But like, the seven draft picks from the 2018 draft, so after the 17 season, but like, Nick Bosa was on that roster. So was Chase Young. Like,
dude,
you know what I mean? Like,
dude,
we built our reputation on being slightly less talented, but being more united. That's the whole reason it's culture trumps talent and strategy and tough, smart, physical. And then they added together because we have to be a team.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Iowa State's culture has gotten better. Matt Campbell's a good coach. Is what it is. We lost. It's tough. It stings. But I think coming back to the strength coach perspective of it, is it weird to, how do I put this? I almost look at a strength coach kind of like a specialist. You don't control a lot on game days.
Correct.
There's not a lot in your, like,
there's very little.
Even as a singular player, you know, maybe the quarterback, right? He's got a lot of stuff that a lot of depends on a quarterback's play. But like, even like a single receiver, you can make some plays. You could catch a touchdown here and there, make a great play. But like, you're also just one of 11 out there. You might touch the ball on 5 to 10% of the offensive plays in the game. It's not like you as an individual player can control a lot. So it's tough to manage those. I don't like the loss. I'm pissed. I'm this, I'm that, but also I have to just control what I can control. As a strength coach, it's like you almost control zero. It's not zero, but the players are the one who go out and play. I think a strength coach who would get wrapped up on a loss, and I'm sure there's these guys out there. You've been all over the industry and probably have met some, probably have seen some across the field in our days at Iowa. They try to use like that that as emotional motivation. Like they may come. Are there actually guys that would come back into the facility this week and be like, "We got fucking embarrassed last week. We're gonna like." You can't let that happen again. And they're really dwelling on it instead of just moving on. Like, are those still, there's still people out there like that?
For sure. And that's what, like, if people are sticking with us week to week, they can't have happen because Troy's coming into town. And I know that strength staff, like that guy has a former head guy in the Big 12. He was at West Virginia for a while. His assistants have worked in the NFL. Like Troy's coming into town and they're ready to play. And you have to turn the page. You have to be ready to move on. And game day as the strength coach, realistically, you're there. Yeah, you'll help the, you know, you want to make sure nobody gets a penalty. So you do the get back thing, but you shouldn't be like actively holding somebody back. What you really do on game day and what my staff and I did at Towson is we're charting plays and work to rest ratios and how often players get rotated in. So that way we could prescribe conditioning and be able to speak specifically to the coaches of this is what conditioning actually looks like in a game for us.
For each individual guy.
For each individual guy, but for each individual team. And like what you realize is that, you know, position or sport to sport, football is different conditioning than any other sport. But even within the game itself, like the people that have that require the most conditioning, linemen and linebackers, they usually never get subbed. So they need a higher aerobic energy system base. Your running backs, like I love that the guy Williams, Caleb, he to me seems like he's got a huge ceiling. Oh,
Caleb Johnson.
Caleb Johnson, sorry, number two.
Bro.
His potential, like he to me looks like he's a stud. But even a guy like him, he gets rotated. The receivers, they get rotated.
Yeah.
D-line, rotated. Quarterback, you don't really run a lot. You hand the ball off. Safeties, you know, the kid Castro, he flies around. But realistically, like those players – they get subbed. That's my point. So like when you're looking at that energy system work, that's why I would be charting. All right, there was a play. Where's their media timeouts? Cause what you realize is the higher level you go in football, the less conditioning matters. Cause there's more media advertising. Cause there's more pavement.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
It is crazy that way.
And so that's when like my assistant would be like, all right, Kate would have the inside the box. So Kate, if there was a substitution at D-line, O-line, fullback or tight end, and then Logan had the secondary and the receivers.
It's funny. It's not only is it, do they not get subbed out, those positions you mentioned, and that impacts their conditioning. They also, by far, across a 60-minute ball game, have way more time under game tension, meaning they're leaning on each other. Like like linemen are, they are locking up with another lineman on every play and they have weight that they are trying to move or keep from getting around them. Linebackers also, they're fitting up into linemen that are coming to the second level or fullbacks or somebody who's blocking. So they have to deal with external load more than anybody else does on the field as well. Running backs are going to get tackled a lot. They're going to get hit a lot. But again, they're getting subbed out a little bit more. So that actually skyrockets the line. I've never even thought about it that way.
That's why you change the conditioning. And again, getting back to what we talked about in the offseason, the lineman's conditioning needs to be 80% grappling, fighting, pushing, and only 20% running because that's what they do in a game.
And I've seen Nick, and I think I saw some stuff from you as well. You guys started to do a lot more grappling kind of stuff with the linemen in the offseason. Is that correct? Right?
Yep. They would literally like 20% of their conditioning would be running. And the other 80%, it was contact. And like we had some linemen that took that stuff seriously. That other linemen were like, I ain't going against him because they would literally try to hurt him. But it's like, no, we'll do the same thing. If the 55 is going to be, we want the skill guys to run for distance for 7 to 8 seconds. Guess what? You linemen, you're going to grapple for 7 to 8 seconds. And then we'll crank the intensity up.
It makes so much sense. like I always thought it was silly. Even and I thought we even did it better than a lot of teams do it. I don't know if this is true, but every once in a while I'll see like the strength coach come across, or like some player will be like, yeah, we used to run 300s or whatever. Like,
still happens. 110 still happens.
Really?
I know.
There's no way there's actually strength coaches that are running linemen 100 yards at a time.
No, 110 yards, but yes, they are.
How are they that dumb? I mean, I think it's so silly to watch a lineman. You rarely do you see, I mean, it's like the only time you're ever going to see it is like a pick where they have to run the other way and try and cut somebody off and make a tackle, or on a really long busted run where somebody gets outside and they want to go make an effort play. I think about, actually, I don't know if you remember this. I believe it was during the COVID season, Linderbaum basically ran stride for stride with Tyler Goodson.
Saw it. Yeah.
I think it was against Wisconsin on one of his touchdown runs, which was first.
But you don't develop that on the 110. You develop that by doing actual speed work and getting fast. Like,
yeah. And then you tap into the aerobic system that you build with the grappling and all the other stuff. Once you get past 20 yards. The ability for turnover rate with their legs and stuff. That's not, it's just not built with the 55s even, or like it's, I always thought it was so, you know me, I've always talked about how I thought the specialist doing that conditioning was stupid. Linemen doing that conditioning was stupid. I don't hate 60 yard shuttles for like a lineman, but even then it's like,
the thing that needs to change with the 60s, and you'll remember this, is the fact that you don't have to touch the line with your hand. You just, and like, I don't want to hear anybody say, oh, there's no like discipline. You touch the line with your foot. Like, you can still be like, have the discipline to touch the line with your foot.
Oh, you don't like touching the line with your hand?
No, it's not applicable to the sporting action. So if you look at when you are doing your low, first of all, you know what happens every time when you go and touch the line with, let's say, your right hand, where is your left hand, Kluver?
It's, oh man, I haven't done it in a long time. On your other leg,
maybe? Or probably on the ground because you're changing direction, right?
Or on the ground, yeah.
Okay, are you doing that when you play football?
No. So, if you are, you're fucked.
Thank you. So that's why don't train that pattern. Second of all, look at the joint angle specificity of your foot hitting the ground and how much higher up you are, hip, knee, and ankle.
Yeah,
that is way more applicable to sport than the deep, deep extreme angles when you're putting your hand all the way down on the ground.
True.
Now, case in point, I know Christian McCaffrey was a fantastic athlete, but when we're trying to change direction on that field and you're not used to being able to stop, plant, put your hand on the ground, and like, you can still get the whole discipline thing because we did it at Towson.
Yeah.
We had coaches looking at the line. If they false started, you blow the whistle. If they don't touch the line with their foot, you blow the whistle.
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. You can still enforce the discipline action, function of the movement. I get it. And actually, if you're somebody like me, I mean, I don't want to brag. I was pretty good at changing direction.
You were very good at 60s. I'll say it.
Yeah, I was, it's about the only good thing I had was my change of direction skills.
You were good at cleaning too.
Decent at cleaning.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you were benching like 365 at 215. You had some,
that's a whole other podcast.
Some,
that's
big old whole, biceps. Like, come on, man, you're put together.
It's a whole other podcast of the early days of what, I mean, it helps now because I program for people and I do workouts and stuff. My self-programming days circle all the way back to about 2008, 2009. And this is just a tangent because we can. I started going to special teams camps. And at the biggest special teams camp in the summer, it was called the National Scholarships Showcase. It's where actual college coaches would come out and watch kickers, punters, snappers. It's crazy. 500 kids at the camp, whatever. The winner, the two best of the charting sessions at that camp, got picked for the Under Armour game. That's how I ended up at that game, all that stuff. Part of that camp was, and this is stupid too, but they had the long snappers run a 40 and they had us do a bench test because it was at Wisconsin Whitewater. It was
185 for reps or 225?
225.
Oh, wow. They put you guys right to the test.
225 for the gonna be juniors, gonna be seniors. I think it was 185 for any younger kids.
Got it.
So I went in there as a sophomore, going to be junior, and I put up 9 reps at 225.
That's
pretty good.
Respectable. That's very respectable. Yeah.
Right. And I was programming like on the bigger, faster, stronger program mindset.
Of course you were. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like bench, squat, deadlift.
Bench good, squat good, deadlift better.
Fuck yeah. and there was a gonna be senior. So a year older than me, he was the only kid who beat me on the bench. And I knew that I'd be coming to that camp the following year. And so for an entire year, dude, I programmed myself bench. Me and my brother used to go to the YMCA after school because it had more equipment than our high school weight room did, because Marshalltown was a little bit behind. So we would drive to the weight room Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. I programmed bench 3 times a week.
Only 3? You were at the gym 4. What are you doing?
I know. I even, before I knew what undulating, you know, programming looked like, I like figured that out in my own way, knowing that like I had to switch up the rep schemes and all these and the volume on certain days and what I was working on. I put on like 70 pounds on my max 1 rep in a year. And I came back the next year and hit 17 reps at 225 as a gonna be senior.
Put a kendo on it, baby.
Felt like a champion, dude. But anyway, I don't even know where we were going with that, but we were on the 60-yard shuttle kind of stuff. You are so right. I don't remember ever cutting that low on a.
And that's all it is. It's like again, for the longest time, like it was DeMarco and Cody that taught it to me.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's, again, from the slight edge, it's like, that's so simple. But even like one of the things that I pulled up the data here from, because literally every single game we chart it. So for us in an FCS school, the average time the ball would get snapped was every 45 seconds. And maybe that means a 3 seconds in play.
Sure.
That's on defense. For offense, it was 44 seconds. Both offense or defense, it was about 6 plays per drive. But then here's the thing. They both had an average rest of 8 minutes between bouts.
Between sets, basically.
Between like going on the field, offense or defense, they had on average 8 minutes.
Yeah.
On defense, on the high end, like if the offense had the ball a lot, quarters change, this is not accounting for halftime. On the high end, there was 15 minutes in between series. Same thing for the offense. Now on the low end, defense, they'd be on the field in 5 minutes. Offense in 4 minutes. So like, that's my point, is you have time to rest and recover.
Yeah, you guys did a pretty good job reflecting that in like our quarters conditioning.
Yep.
When we would run 4 quarters. That was close. Like we got pretty close to that.
We worked, and the data on that was like, I specifically remember the first time we ran quarters with GPS in the summer of 2014, because like Doyle was all geeked up, like, all right, like this is the first time we got catapults on, like he's dying to see the GPS data. And I'm like, all right, let me pull the stuff up. And I showed it to him. I was like, this is scary how similar it was. Like,
yeah.
But that was the one time where we saw that the high end distance for linemen was, because we had Sheriff and Carl, I think Louie too, were wearing GPS units.
Yep.
And remember, we got rid of 55s for linemen and they did more 60s.
Yeah.
But that's like, we could have adapted even further and been like, hey, well, let's grapple instead. Like, but like, again, you don't know what you don't know. And I learned about the grappling stuff from Andy Ryland through everything in Strength Coach Network. So it's like, you learn and you evolve.
And to help the listeners, because I know that we're going to end up doing this, we've probably already done it about 15 times in this podcast. Quarters, what we're referencing when Coach and I talk about that is, it's essentially the final workout of the summer. The biggest one at the end was 4 quarters. It was supposed to simulate a 4 quarter game. A quarter, in conditioning terms, was 6 reps. We broke those 6 reps into 3 different kinds of reps. A 55-yard sprint, just ready, set, go. You run 55 yards. A 60-yard shuttle, which consists of going out 15 yards, turning around, coming back, and doing that twice. 15, 15, 15, 15 is 60. And then a cut 85, which is a combination of both. You go out 15, you bring it back, and then you get out of that second cut and you run your 55. So it's half of a 60 plus a 55. And a quarter consists of 3 55s, 2 60s, and 1 cut 85. And they were never the same. They were always random. You didn't know what you were running. Every quarter looked different. You could run your 355s. It was actually really fun from my perspective. It's like, what are we going to have next? You know, you get that cut 85 to start the quarter and you're just like, fuck yeah, baby. We're getting the worst one out of the way. Let's go. Because you always wanted to finish on the easy, just 55 yard sprints. Although I like the 60s better. Because if you can change direction, you actually have more time to run your 60. Regardless, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about quarters conditioning. So at the end of the summer, you would run four quarters of six reps, 24 total reps. I don't know what the rest was between quarters. I want to say it was like 4 minutes, maybe 5 minutes.
It would wind up being 4 minutes based on, you know, who would go first. Because if the skill guys started the quarter, you know, because it would go skill, semis, line. So you would wind up getting closer to that 6 minute full recovery to, again, simulate a series in a game.
And now what I'm imagining is if we would have just replaced those 12 55s across the four quarters with 12 9 second bouts of grappling for the linemen, it would have been so cool. That would have been really, really cool to
watch. Because everybody would have eyes on you guys. And that's part of how we would do our grappling is like, you know, with everybody watching it.
Or yeah, it's a show.
It's like, hey, you don't want to get beat up because, like, you know what would happen. In your group, who'd you have? You had Josie and Bo and Kittle and, you know, Men.
Wolfish, Travis.
You guys would be making fun of people if they weren't going hard, right? Yeah. Or, like, even the skill guys across the way. Desmond would be busting everybody's chops. Like, why aren't you going hard? Like, it would happen. So it would be good to be on display.
Yeah. Fun stuff. I don't know how we got off on this topic, but it's been a great.
It's because we talked about conditioning and how conditioning goes into the game and what are things that strength coaches do during a game when you're watching it.
Yeah. Let's bring it back around just to the Iowa State coming off a loss. How do we handle that? We'll kind of wrap up with that. Like you said, you come back into the weight room, a good strength coach addresses the team, addresses that. Well, actually, this is a good place to go. The strength coaches are the arbiters of culture. They are, you know, tip of the spear on how we operate, how we do things, the strength, how you guys prepare in the weight room in the off season. Most of your off season is spent training. Wins and losses, unfortunately, though it may not be exactly the way that this works, wins and losses and how you perform on game day are a reflection on your culture. And so that takes a little bit of a hit, and that's where you have to emotionally disconnect, I'm sure. How do you control the language to the players? How do you control that next week when you go into you're like, hey, we took a loss, we took a lump on the head, we get back on the horse here. What's that messaging like?
It's exactly that, and you start by, it's going to be a repeat. You're in the staff meeting with the coaches and you're talking about that. You're saying that to the coaches. Cause if you're the driver of the culture, if you're the heartbeat of the team and the coach is the head, you're saying that in the staff meeting to them. And then you're in the team meeting when the coach is talking about, hey, we're moving on from the game. And then you're just echoing what the coach said. And then maybe you say it just in your own way. So if the head coach is like, hey, you know, we're moving on to Troy, then you just start talking about whatever it is, but you echo what the head coach says and you formulate what the head coach says by being in that staff meeting. That's the way you go about doing it. And it's like the farmer, you plant the seeds of the positivity of what the coach said and you pluck out if anybody's being negative and talking about weeks past, or even if they're like, oh, you know, remember when we beat Illinois? No, we're not talking about that. Like, you just echo what the coach says and you cultivate it in the staff room.
Coming off of a rivalry game like Iowa State, is there any data to support? I would doubt there is, but, you know, because everybody gets up for every game, but it's like a rivalry game. There's a lot of juice there. There's a lot of adrenaline dump after a game like that, especially a game that ends on a field goal, just cut the hearts out. Do guys seem more beat up after a week like that?
Physically? After a loss. Cause if they won, you don't hurt as bad. You just don't after a win. The bumps and bruises don't hurt nearly as bad. The things that you would not report to the athletic trainers, you report because you lost. And one thing, like, coach tried saying that, like, Doyle would be like, oh, you know, like, look how high, when we had the heart rate monitors, look how high the heart rate was during the Iowa State game. I was like, well, coach, it was also the hottest game of the year. Like,
yeah, true.
Like, that's like, maybe, but at the same time, it was the hottest. Like, And that's going to play into it more because again, like
heat affects heart rate. So
yeah, exactly. And like, who's wearing the catapult? Who's wearing all the data? The experience guys like Jay Higgins ain't like, oh, it's no, like, yeah, you want to win the game, but at the same time, you're going to have a dump when it's, you know, Ohio State at the Big House or at the Shoe and Michigan at the Big House. Like all of that's going to happen. To me, it's just the fact of like, is it actually hot? You know, like that's going to affect heart rate a little bit more because after the first quarter, you're like, all right, I'm used to this new environment. But when it's just hot and you can't escape the heat, that'll catch up to you.
I've experienced how heat affects heart rate so much when I've run a couple of the half marathons and the one marathon that I did. And you start to learn about what heat does to your heart rate at the same RPE that you would normally go. It's nuts. It's crazy. It's not good. It's actually crazy to me knowing the science, the data behind it, and then knowing what those players put out on a Saturday. It's just really impressive. Guys are really impressive with what they do. We talked about getting into the weekly schedule. We're now into a routine, and I want to finish with this. By week two, on the strength conditioning side, at a Division I level, you're pretty much, from your guys' perspective, thinking like, okay, if guys aren't getting into their routine by now, if they don't know, it's week two, right? We've gone week one or preseason, use that first week to get to week one, after week one to get to week two. We're now into basically week three of prep. If guys aren't getting the routine of what a Monday looks like, especially involving, you know, shakes in the morning, body weight weigh-ins, that kind of thing, is this where you guys really start to see the data on guys who aren't quite getting it versus guys who are? And it starts to be a more clear picture on kind of some of the off the field stuff.
That and anecdotally, like you can just start to see because you're constantly reading body language. You're constantly seeing how do they show up? What are they like? How are they walking in? How are they presenting themselves? Yeah. So when you have, okay, anecdotally, they're presenting this way, they're showing up, this is what their body language shows, this is what they're doing. And hey, they're not hitting their percentages, body weight is declining, or HRVs are like, you start to see the trend and you don't overreact on the daily, but you see on a micro, a macro scale of like, hey, this is kind of a trend. Let's intervene to help you. And so, yeah, you do start to realize that because you should start to get in that good cadence and that good rhythm.
Yeah. I imagine that you start to see the away from football stuff start to pop up or not pop up as well. Like, you know, by now you've probably had a couple quizzes in a couple of your classes, or the guys who are going to try and toy with not going to class have a couple absences pop up on their weekly academic. They're going to have to talk with Mel because they're not showing up to class. So for those out there listening, wondering how early that stuff starts to become something on the radar of the coaches, it's week two and it's already on the radar. Basically it's
yeah. And they were talking about it the week prior saying, hey, get ready. The progress reports are coming out. And from being in those staff meetings, like you want to make sure you have a coach that supports it, because like Rob at Towson was great about it. If a player had three absences or more in a class, they weren't playing.
Yeah.
Like period. And so, because we said it all the time, your football career will end 5 years, 10 years, 15 years tomorrow, who knows, but prepare yourself for life after football.
Yeah, there was probably room for that mentally for me. I could have done that better. Could have done that a lot better. We'll leave it there. A great episode with Coach Justin Lima again, week three. You guys hear this Friday. Tomorrow, the Hawks take on Troy and ideally get back on track. Again, we talked about it with Illinois State. This is not something you would say in the media, but this is a lesser program. This is a program that they should be able to handle. They are expected to win this game. So how do you bounce back after a loss? We'll see. We'll talk to you guys next week. Till then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.